It's the TTY Dialer, episode 24 for the week of April 10th through April 15th. Hi there, welcome to another weekly companion to WRVO's old-time radio show tuned to yesterday, where every night of the week we bring you Golden Age of Radio comedy, drama, mystery, action, westerns, sci-fi, and much more to your theater of the mind. I'm Mark Levonier. In this podcast, I bring you radio history and fun with sound from radio's past and a look at the shows coming up for the week. Also, we have this little thing where we start with a commercial from radio's past.
You're twice as sure with two great names, Frigidaire and General Motors. Frigidaire, the greatest name in refrigeration, is made only by General Motors. And it is this association of experience, of skill with skill, that makes Frigidaire America's favorite refrigerator today. The 7 million Frigidaires built and sold are the best proof of Frigidaire's outstanding record of dependability, of lasting satisfaction. For back of every great refrigeration principle pioneered by Frigidaire, back of every exciting new Frigidaire feature, back of every exclusive Frigidaire advantage, is one all-important purpose: to keep food good to eat. Remember this when you choose your new refrigerator. Remember the record of millions of Frigidaires in millions of American kitchens. And remember, you're twice as sure with two great names. For Frigidaire is made only by General Motors. Today, Frigidaire will not interrupt this program for further product mention.
That was a commercial for a show called Hollywood Star Time, which was heard for only about a year on CBS. Frigidaire had sponsored several programs over the years, like The Comedy of Lum and Abner and the adventure show A Man Called X, whose star Herbert Marshall was actually the host of the second season of Hollywood Star Time. And on occasion, Frigidaire would bring in the General Motors name to help reinforce their brand of refrigerators, mostly because GM was the owner. Now, while this may have helped sales of their products, in the case of Hollywood Star Time, the show didn't really fare well when it was on the air from 1946 to 1947. It did feature films adapted to radio, many with their original stars, but its ratings suffered under the weight of, to the public, a good problem to have in entertainment, and that was too many choices to hear their favorite Hollywood actors on radio. At that time, there was already the well-established prestige show, the Lux Radio Theater, delivering brilliant adaptations of films each week. The newer Academy Award Theater doing the same, the Hollywood Star Preview, which featured actors new and old, along with guest appearances across comedy programs and gossip shows. There was really plenty to hear from the movie capital of the country, and newer shows like Hollywood Star Time tended to get pushed around in the ratings until they folded. In addition to this, at the end of the first season of that show, which had a deal with the 20th Century Fox studio to use their talent in exchange for free movie ads, saw that deal fall through, as Fox felt their stars would get more attention on the Lux Radio Theater, which drew a lot more listeners. So yes, after just a short time, the Frigidaire program did get put on ice. Coming up this Monday, April 10th, on Tuned to Yesterday at 10, it's Mystery for an Hour with episodes of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, and The Falcon from 1950. Then westerns, we have Gunsmoke and Wild Bill Hickok coming up. This Tuesday night, April 11th at 10, it's comedy from The Abbott and Costello Show and the Bob Hope Program.
After one shot, I said to my caddy, Johnny Woods, I said, how do you like the way my hips follow through? He said, 12. Now, what do you want me to find, your golf ball or your girdle? And I played with Bing today, and it's a lot easier for me to keep up with him going around the course this year. He's added a sidecar to his wheelchair. I've also played with Sinatra. He's the best number three iron I ever used.
After that, at 11, it's True History from the Cavalcade of America and the Guess Who program. It's Mr. President from 1947, a really cool show where you hear the historical facts and a drama, then guess which president the star is portraying. And you can hear these shows this Monday, April 10th, and Tuesday, April 11th, from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday. This Thursday, April 13th in 1952, an inadvertent on-air audition took place on NBC's Hollywood Star Playhouse program. Jimmy Stewart and William Conrad would appear in a story that would launch one of the last dramatic westerns to have any amount of success on radio, The Six Shooter. The story and the series would make its full-time start in September of 1953 and would follow the drifting adventures of Britt Ponsett, played by Stewart. Having filmed several western movies up to this point, like Winchester 73 and Broken Arrow, Stewart was able to bring a western-style grit to his already natural and gentlemanlike manner to portray life in the West from the perspective of a man with a reputation for being a master of the six-gun, but with some reserve and reflection. Now, although the show only lasted a year on NBC, it was practically an anomaly, with a major star like Jimmy Stewart in a new radio show at a time where success in the medium was really giving way to the growing entity of television. It did do well on air with adult-style drama and action, but it failed to pick up any major sponsor, making it a sustained show. It's reported that Liggett and Myers, the makers of Chesterfield cigarettes, approached the series to have a commercial sponsorship, but Stewart himself turned it down when he thought it might affect his family-friendly image. Let's listen to some sound now from the Hollywood Star Playhouse debut of the character and the story of the Six Shooter from April 13, 1952.
The moon came out, thin, yellow. Not real bright, but enough so you could follow the trail. About 3 miles, there wasn't no blood. He must have wrapped something around the wound. Wrapped it real tight. And then we found the bandage. A piece of shirt tail sopped through. For the next mile, I'd been bleeding a lot, worse than ever. And he was hit pretty bad.
Looks like it.
He couldn't have gone much further because I... Oh. Hold it, Scar. Ed.
Yeah.
Hold on. Over there in the gully, that cabin.
Yeah.
Whose is it?
Used to belong to Jake Levant. Died a couple of years ago. Ain't nobody living there now.
There's somebody living there.
Huh?
Out in back. There's a pony. You better go ahead on foot. Yeah?
We're gonna take him alive, ain't we?
If we can.
We gotta take him alive, Britt.
Ben.
I don't know, Britt. Not for sure.
It could be Ben?
It could be.
Where's he been the last couple of days?
I don't know that neither. Had an argument with him 2 nights ago. He needed some money. He'd been playing poker and lost a lot.
$5,000's a lot.
I wouldn't give him none. He got mad, said he'd get it himself. And I hit him hard across the face. I hit him twice. He started to hit me back. Then he walked out of the house. I ain't seen him since. I wish he had hit me back.
Now, we gotta get across that clearing, Ed. Over to that clump of trees.
He may see us.
Yeah, we'll have to take that chance. You ready?
Yeah.
These trees for a couple of minutes.
Okay.
And then we'll rush him. Ain't gonna be easy to take him, Ed. Now that he's spotted us.
You ain't gonna kill him, Britt.
I ain't gonna let him kill me.
It ain't his fault, Britt. It's mine.
And you know that ain't so.
No, it's the truth. It's my fault.
You didn't raise him to be a killer, Ed.
Maybe I did, Britt. I was the sheriff, seeing that everybody kept close to the line, seeing that everybody lived honest, especially Ben. I broke him, Britt. Broke him like you break a wild horse or try to take all the fight out of him fast. You know what happens when you do that to a horse? He gets tame, but the fight's still there, and someday he turns wild again.
I'll rush him alone, Ed.
No. Stay here, Britt.
Well, Sam Norton's dead. Maybe Fred Miller, too.
Killing Ben won't bring him back. He's my son, Britt, my only son. You don't have no kids. You don't know.
I'm sorry, Ed.
No, we're going back to town.
Not without him.
We're going back. Now, you can outdraw me, Britt, but I'll still have time to get a shot off.
I'll try to get him alive, Ed. I'll try.
No, don't turn your back on me, Britt. Don't be a fool. Don't make me do it, Britt.
I wasn't being brave. I knew he wouldn't shoot. A man like Ed Schofield just don't change overnight. You can figure a man like Ed. That's what I thought, anyway. But I hadn't figured what would happen next. I haven't figured on him running out into the clearing, standing there in the moonlight, gray against the black sky.
Ben! It's me, Ben, your dad! Can you hear me, Ben? Rick Thompson's coming after you. Throw out your gun, Ben. Rick Thompson's coming. Now listen to me, Ben. It's your dad.
I saw him go down real slow, like his legs had buckled under him. I couldn't tell how bad he'd been hit. Rolled down a gully out of range, and I crawled forward. I pushed myself past a couple of rocks and headed toward the back door. The kid was in the kitchen. I couldn't see him, but I could hear him moving around, going from window to window, looking out, waiting for me. I slid past another rock. I could run for the door or wait. The kid made up a mind for me. I slipped down fast, and the bullets nicked the rocks. The kid had good hearing. He knew I was right there. I took up my gun and waited. I knew he'd get nervous first. Young fellas always do. I wasn't so young. I could wait. It wasn't more than 5 minutes before the door started opening. His pony knew I was coming, too. He started for the horse. I aimed at his leg. For a second, he stopped moving and just hung in midair like a hawk. Then he sprawled forward out of sight behind a log. I raised up a little and hunched myself along the side of the cabin. Everything was quiet now. Even his pony. The moon went behind a thick cloud, and I came around the corner of the cabin. Suddenly, the moon came out again, just in time for me to see his .45, just in time to see him coming up over the top of the log. His revolver slipped out of his fingers, and I saw him trying to reach for it again. He couldn't make it. I stood up and walked over to the log. The kid was lying face down, gasping for breath, a little short gasps. He pulled himself onto the flat of his hands and then he passed out. I turned him over with my foot and I looked at his face.
This Wednesday on Tuned to Yesterday at 10 o'clock, The Mysterious Traveler in an hour of sci-fi and X-1 from 1955. Then it's Crime at 11 from True Detective Mysteries and a broadcast of Candy Matson.
What do I have to go on?
Well, very little. Well, my suspicions point to a musician who worked at the Scarlet Dawn. He seemed to resent very strongly my stepping into the picture.
Were they going to get it?
Off and on, until I started to back Donna's career.
A very interesting triangle. What do the police have to say?
The police, Miss Matson, have not yet been notified.
What?
I went over there this morning, and I discovered the body lying on the floor. I became confused. I locked the door and called the Scarlet Dawn. I told the manager that Miss Dunham was quite ill and wouldn't be able to appear tonight.
Extremely ill, I'd say.
This Thursday night, April 13th at 10, it's drama from the Screen Director's Playhouse, then suspense. And we close out Thursday night with horror at 11 from broadcasts of The Haunting Hour and a sort of whimsical play on the author's playhouse called The Inexperienced Ghost from 1944. You can hear these shows live on the air or via our website, WRVO.org, Wednesday, April 12th, and Thursday, April 13th from 10 to midnight. And by the way, if that is a little too late for you for any reason, you can always listen to Tune to Yesterday on our second stream on our website, WRVO.org. It's called WRVO2, where we air public radio remix throughout the day, but from 8 to 10 every night, it's previous broadcasts of Tune to Yesterday. You can actually make it a 4-hour night of old-time radio if you like by switching between the two channels. And there's information on how to listen at our website, WRVO.org. Just click on the Tune to Yesterday tabs. And this Friday, April 14th, was the day that writer Arnold Pearl was born. Before he would become to be known as an Emmy nominee for his work on the East Side West Side television show in 1963, or as an Oscar nominee for his writing work on the 1972 documentary Malcolm X, he made his living in radio during its golden age. And he was well known as a writer who would heavily research the topics or genres he was working in. evidenced by his credits with several radio documentaries, like 1946's American Patriot, where a piece of history was unearthed that disputed the presidential election of 1876, or another drama he wrote that year called The Empty Noose, which profiled the lives of Nazi war criminals in an effort to justify their executions. His great work would land him a job on the Jewish awareness program The Eternal Light on the air. He also worked for commercial broadcasts like The Amazing Mr. Tutt and the newspaper reporter drama The Big Story, which also served as the backdrop for his first television script when the show was brought to the small screen. As he was gravitating toward TV, among his last contributions to radio was writing for the program Up for Parole.
Tonight again, another in the exciting new crime series, Up for Parole. Authentic cases is actually presented before the parole boards in your state prisons and told here for the first time.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to sit in judgment on another human being to decide whether he shall become your neighbor, your employee, perhaps your friend, or remain where you, society, have put him, behind prison bars. For that human being is a social offender, a criminal, now up for parole.
Arnold Pearl was able to draw from his strengths in documentary and investigative reporting for the series that featured true stories during its 1950 run on CBS Radio. Here's some sound from one of their broadcasts.
As you're well aware, there's another inmate inside this prison, well known to you, Clifford Chasen.
Yes, sir, I know.
It's known to this board that you have, during your imprisonment, stayed away from Chasen. Never exchanged a word with him in the past 3.5 years.
I tried my best, sir.
I'm going to take a liberty with the normal procedure of this board and bring this man into the hearing. Guard, show Chasen in, please.
I want to caution you, sir. This man is a fantastic liar.
Over there, Chasen. Thanks to the chairman.
Chasen, you're aware that you were picked up in connection with the mercantile trust theft on the word of a stool pigeon?
That's right.
You're also aware, probably by now, of the name of that stool pigeon.
That's right. Freddie Galante from Detroit.
Let me add to your store of information, Chasen. The name of the man who informed on you was Harold Edgerton II.
What?
That's a lie.
Silence! The question is addressed to you, answer. Otherwise, absolute silence. Now, Chasen, who masterminded the gang? Whose gang was it? Who, in fact, was the chief?
So you stole on me. You're the one. All these years I kept my mouth shut. All these years. What have you been telling him? All right, I'll tell him. Sure, in the beginning I brought him into the organization. But after that it was his idea. Every safe job, every stick-up, every house we knocked over, he cased them. He planned them. What's he been telling you?
I have said my piece, gentlemen.
Did you tell him about knocking over your own house? Did you tell him how you wanted one of the boys to do it while your wife was there to make it look more authentic? To knock her down, rough her up, maybe break her arm? Did you tell him that?
The man's a pathological liar.
Did you tell him how you killed Tony? Did you tell him how when he fell overboard I wanted to search for him, even if it was risky? Not what you said?
No. Tell them what I said, Chasen.
You said, what's one death when you're making history? That's what you said, well,
not another word, either of you. Now, one last question. Harold Edgerton, what have you to say to all this?
Will you keep him quiet, sir?
He'll be quiet. Guard, stand by this man. All right, proceed.
Gentlemen, this man standing here with me is one of the most cunning and desperate criminals I have ever met. You've just tasted a sample of his pathological lying. Of course I informed on him. I would do it again. He killed a man. Let me inform on him once more. Gentlemen, there is a prison break planned in this institution. Clifford Chasen planned that prison break.
Well,
silence!
Silence! Are you finished, Adjutant?
Not quite, sir. I wish only to remind you that I was someone who felt the need for excitement and got involved terribly and desperately over my head. I did what I did out of fear and because I was a dupe. But if in your wisdom, gentlemen, you see fit to return me to society, I can only say that I believe I have learned my lesson. Let me go back to my family. My guilt will always be with me.
All right, Edgerton. Board will decide your case. Step outside with a guard.
This Friday night at 10 o'clock on Tune to Two Yesterday sitcoms, we'll hear The Smiths of Hollywood and a broadcast of My Friend Irma. Then Adventure for an Hour. It's a half-hour episode of Chandu the Magician. Then Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall star in Bold Venture.
You cotton to the deal?
Yeah. Yeah, we cotton. Who do we ask for?
You ask me a question I can't answer and it don't bother me. For $300, it don't have to bother you neither.
Give him back the money, Slate.
Now, wait just a minute. This client made contact with me through a native, paid him a fee, asked me no questions, and told me no lies. All the gentleman wants, I was told, is to get off of the freighter. He's sick of the smell of it under his feet.
Shall we give him back the money, Slate?
Your head going to fat? Where else could we pick up 3 C notes with so little pain?
You said it, Mr. Shannon. No pain. Hardly no pain at all.
This Friday night, April 15th at 10, Crime from episodes of Gangbusters and Dragnet. Then Romance at 11 from the Lux Radio Theater. Hear these programs Friday, April 14th and Saturday, April 15th from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday. You can hear it live on the air or streaming at WRVO.org. So there's a look at this week of what's coming up on Tune to Yesterday. I hope you enjoyed some of the stories from the shows from radio's past. And I hope you'll listen in the coming week to all of the great programs we have on the air for you. Now, if you do have any questions or comments for me about Old Time Radio or Tune to Yesterday or the TTY Dialer podcast, just send me an email. I do enjoy hearing from you. My address is mark@wrvo.org. That's mark@wrvo.org. Thanks a lot for listening to the podcast. See you next week.